When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me today, as always, is Joe Healy. Joe, we're rolling along through October here. We got playoff baseball going. How do you kind of engage with the MLB playoffs?
Yeah, I try. So I'll be honest. I watch as much of it as I can. I'm locked into it every night. The problem is, I'm kind of an old man at 31 years old, and some of these late nights can really wear you down. I mean, even when they don't run super late, I love it. There's nothing better than October baseball at the big league level. But man, it's the time of year when it's excellent on one end of the spectrum, and it's also on the other end of the spectrum the time when you understand why sometimes it can be a little bit difficult for the fair weather fan to really get involved in the baseball playoffs.
Yeah, it's a fun time of year to be around the office. It's just a fun time of year with baseball in general. I compiled a list of all the players on postseason rosters where they went to college, and I learned that there are four schools tied with four players on rosters. Joe, you haven't seen this list yet. Do you want to give a guess at any of those four schools?
No.
Okay.
LSU, I don't know. I mean,
LSU is on there.
Yes. Okay.
So it's Florida, LSU, Louisville, and Cal State Fullerton. Four powers. No real surprises there. If we're not talking about, ODU has three. I think that would stump some people if I told you, guess any of the ones with three. So yeah, it's fun to see these guys, move on and then compete in professional baseball at the highest level, and always a good time of year for college fans, to check back in with those players, and for just for college players. I know a lot of coaches want their guys to be watching as much baseball as they can this time of year, because obviously this is the best doing it at a high level every night. So it's a very exciting time of year. We are not going to talk too much about the playoffs, though. You can check out during the playoffs, Baseball America has a daily podcast with JJ Cooper and friends, kind of a revolving cast there, breaking down what happened the previous night. So if you're interested in that, it's in your Baseball America podcast feed. So you can check that out. Today on the college podcast, we are going to have Georgia shortstop Cam Shepard join us. Cam is a senior this year. He made the decision pretty quickly after Georgia's season ended last year that he was going to be coming back for his senior year. And, he's going to lead a very talented Georgia team, at least from a defensive standpoint. He's just been an absolute lockdown shortstop, really, from day one for the Bulldogs. And that's very vital to their pitching and defense philosophy there. I think a lot of the attention on Georgia this year is going to focus on Emerson Hancock and Cole Wilcox in the rotation. But the defense behind them is very important. And when you have a guy like Cam Shepard at shortstop, that's obviously a very good cog to build around. So we're going to talk to Cam a little bit about that, a little bit about his senior season, that's upcoming, the decision to come back, and all things Georgia with Cam Shepard. Before we get to that, I want to mention again, Head of the Class, Baseball America's new college baseball book. If you've been listening to the podcast this fall, you've heard me talk about it. We are looking back at the last four decades of college baseball, all of the best players, the best programs, best moments, coaches, national champions. It's all in there. It's a very exciting book to have seen come together, putting the finishing touches on it now. And it's been a fun trip down memory lane for me, and I'm sure it will be for any of our readers. or listeners here on the podcast, you're listening to a college baseball podcast. I feel like you're probably pretty interested in college baseball. And this book is just a fantastic look into the last four decades. And we also look a little further back. We have a breakdown or an introduction looking at that goes all the way back to before World War II, even before the College World Series started. And that, frankly, I didn't know a whole lot about. So that was very educational. And just to look at the rise of what college baseball was once the World Series began and once it got situated in Omaha. Of course, you have all those USC titles in that period, and then in the last four decades, just to see the growth of college baseball has and examine that on a little more detailed level has been very interesting. On Twitter, our editor Matt Eddy, who's kind of leading this project, is kind of a tease. He mentioned that LSU was the program of the decade by a formula that we've been using here at Baseball America for many years, created by Jim Callis. So that's how far that goes back. And LSU, if you take it over the last four decades, they are the number one team. Joe, is that surprising in any way, given they won six national titles in the time span we're talking about?
Yeah, no surprise at all there. And it's kind of not to take anything away from what they did, because it's obviously incredible and well-deserved. But it's the kind of run that, you just aren't going to probably see in college baseball. I mean, we've kind of beat this dead horse throughout the season when we were talking about things like the possibility of Florida State, for example, missing the postseason last year. It's just the parity is such that, in college baseball, there's no real guarantee year to year of your level of success. And certainly that level of success, I think, will probably be something we don't see ever again. I mean, there are other examples, Arizona State once upon a time, USC once upon a time. That stuff's tough to recreate, probably was even tough to recreate back then, but they pulled it off. But now that kind of stuff is absolutely unheard of.
It's truly remarkable. And, Skip Bertman instrumental in that, but it's obviously transcended that one amazing dynasty that he created there, what they've done to keep it going and what Paul Mainieri has done to keep them going in this decade has been truly remarkable as well. I know that their fans want more than the one national title he's delivered in the last 10 years, but, they're always one of, seems like every year they're a national seed and in Omaha or in the mix. And so it's getting harder to win a national title, as we've said. But what LSU has accomplished over the last 30 or so years, very, very impressive. And so I think that fans of the LSU Tigers will be very interested in the book. But anyone, again, that's listening to this podcast, you're a college baseball fan. I think the head of the class, our new college baseball book will very much interest you, and you can pre-order it at store.baseballamerica.com. With that, I want to let's just get to this this interview we have with Cam Shepard, who we're very excited to talk to. Again, Georgia comes into the season as a national championship favorite, and Cam Shepard is going to be back at shortstop for the fourth year for the Bulldogs, looking to lead them back to Omaha, where they have not been in the last decade. So let's hear what Cam has to say about this upcoming season and how the Bulldogs are progressing this fall. Today on the Baseball America College Podcast, we're excited to be joined by Cam Shepard, Georgia shortstop. Cam, how excited are you that we're into fall? And I assume you guys are starting to really kind of get rolling here with fall practice.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. I mean, it's been a long time coming, even with individuals and workouts and everything like that. Kind of getting into inter squads and all that kind of stuff. So it's exciting for the team and exciting for myself, and just ready to get after it.
So last season, the season had barely ended. I feel like by the time you'd announced your decision that you were going to come back for your senior year, was that an easy decision? And kind of what factors did you consider while you were making that decision?
Yeah, it was a really tough decision. Like you said, it almost seems like it was right after we ended. But as soon as the season kind of came to an end, we got knocked out of the tournament. I kind of just thought like something in my heart was missing. And so by the time before I tweeted it out, I was kind of thinking of like, what is it? And I've always had two goals coming into college. One, obviously, I want to play professional baseball and make it to the big leagues. But the other one was also to get to Omaha. And, you know, that was just kind of like the basis of my decision is I wanted to give it one more shot to get it to Omaha. And I think we have a chance to do that this year with this team. And so that's where my heart was leading me. And that's what I decided to do was to give it one more shot and give it my best to get to Omaha.
Yeah, the decision announcement was even before the draft. Did that? So you didn't even care what the draft had to say. Was that did that surprise even you that you didn't want to wait that long?
No, I mean I talked to my dad about it and my family, and I didn't want to send anyone mixed messages or tell someone I was going to sign and then back out last minute and kind of like not seem like I was committed. So I thought it'd be best just to get out front and just to let everyone know, hey, I'm going to go back to college. That's what my heart's telling me. I want to get back to Omaha or go to Omaha. So I just didn't want to send anyone mixed messages of like seem like I'm almost backing out on them for whatever reason. So that's why I went ahead and did it before the draft.
You alluded to it in your first answer that, you know, your goal is to get this team back to Omaha and you guys are going right to be a team that's looked at as having that opportunity. Right. How exciting has it been to have been a part of a core group of guys that's really brought Georgia baseball back to national prominence? Because when you came into the program, it was, I mean, frankly, a program that was kind of in need of a jumpstart. So it has to be kind of cool for you to know that you're one of these guys that's brought it back to this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really cool just to kind of see it transform in front of our eyes and kind of be a part of that. Like you said, my freshman year, we weren't the best. Didn't have a great record. And then going into sophomore and junior year, we really turned it around. And, you know, that's pretty special to be a part of. And I think that kind of gave me even more motivation to, all right, let's get this team to Omaha. Let's finish this thing. I got one last year. Let's get to Omaha, which is the ultimate goal.
What kind of vision did Scott Strickland kind of present to you while he was recruiting you that made you want to jump in with the Bulldogs?
I mean, pretty much that the group of guys are my recruiting class is the recruiting class that could kind of turn it around. And if you ask them, the guys before me, I'm sure they got tired of Coach Strickland saying that. but yeah, he pretty much just said like, this is the group we've been waiting on. This is the group that can turn this program around. And I think we came in with a lot of confidence and yeah, we struggled a little bit freshman year, kind of getting used to the level of SEC play and the amount of games that you have to play. But yeah, he just pretty much said like, this is the group that he's been looking forward to. And we came with a lot of confidence and that's what we try to play with on the field.
So Teddy mentioned it in the introduction that you guys are rolling with fall ball now. You know, yours is a team that has some absolute horses on the mound. When you guys are doing inter squads, who's the guy that when you step in the box, you just know that is not going to be a fun at bat?
Obviously either Emerson or Cole, but at the same time, I wouldn't necessarily say it's not a fun at bat. It's almost more fun because, you know, like this guy's a dude and it's a chance to see that on your own team. And it kind of gets you to get up for the challenge. So that's kind of how I approach it. Not really that it's something that's not going to be fun. And if he beats me, he beats me. But I'm going to give it my best effort and it's fun to be challenged and that kind of stuff.
You've started every game at shortstop since you got to Georgia.
Yep.
What allowed you to be that prepared to go right when you got there as a freshman?
I think it's just all mental. Over the course of the season, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs, but I think mentally you kind of just have to approach every day exactly the same, whether you're 0-4, 4-4. You kind of just have to stay even keeled, and that's kind of how I approach it. And I feel like that's allowed me to be ready for every game. I don't really get up or down. And I just have the same pregame routine and just go about it that way. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Just stay even keeled and just to take everything like it's a new day.
Do you think that approach helped you last year in the SEC tournament against A&M? You guys were getting no hit and then you're able to come back and you hit the walk-off in that game, if I'm remembering this right.
Yeah.
Is that what allows you to have success in that kind of situation?
Yeah, I think for sure. I mean, no matter how big the moment is, at the end of the day, you're still playing the game of baseball, the game you love. So why put added pressure on yourself and say, oh, this pitch is, I've got to do something with this pitch. I've got to do something with this at bat. Because at the end of the day, yeah, you might look back on it and say, wow, if I would have done this differently, the game could have been differently. But you still have to get 27 outs or you have to still make 27 outs. So I just think taking every at bat and every pitch as the exact same, I feel like it helps me be successful in those kind of situations.
So it's not just that you've played a ton of games at shortstop and been durable there. You're also one of the better defenders of that position, which is a premium position. How much pride, first of all, do you just take in the defensive side of the game? And then what does that preparation look for you when you go into an offseason wanting to, you know, just get a little bit sharper on defense? What does that look like for you? What are those things you focus on?
I take pride in it. It's not something that is the most glamorous thing from people on the outside. Most people just look at hitting statistics and that kind of stuff. But I take a lot of pride in my defense and in the off season. I just feel like it's all about getting good reads and a good first step. So that starts as something simple as diet, staying on top of that. So yeah, I can stay quick in the field, light on my feet. And pretty much just a lot of speed and agility, try to keep my feet fast. So I can feel the ball with my feet, and then you start getting into hand-eye coordination. So you start mixing in feet drills and hand drills and just that kind of stuff. Try to stay consistent with that kind of thing and just go from there. Yeah.
This is a fun time of the year in the baseball calendar, right? with the playoffs going on. How much are you able to watch? I know you have a lot of stuff going on, but how much are you able to watch, right? And what do you enjoy about October playoff baseball?
I watch as much as I can. I feel like the more you can watch, the more you can learn. So why not take every opportunity you can to watch a big league game? For October baseball, it's just the excitement. I mean, I watched the Braves game last night. Me and a few of my buddies were at my house watching the game, and it's just every pitch seems huge. With all the relievers, all the pitching changes they're making, I mean, every single pitch, every single inning, every single out matters. And that's probably the most fun thing to watch, because I feel like sometimes in the middle of the season gets so long, the excitement from the fans' perspective and all that kind of stuff kind of goes down. So I feel like once the season's on the line, the excitement and everything with it, that it's pretty cool to watch on TV for sure.
That game, the game between St. Louis and Atlanta, game one, was quite a battle. I mean, has your heart rate come down yet, or do you still feel like you're working with a little bit of an elevated heart rate after that?
Oh man, that was crazy. The emotional swings in that game was wild. But you know, I've come down a little bit. I'm just excited to see the game tonight and kind of see how everything's going to happen tonight.
Is there any shortstop or player, I guess, in general, when you were growing up that you kind of modeled yourself after or just really liked watching?
Yeah, I like watching Brandon Crawford. I know he's a West Coast guy, but Brandon Crawford's definitely a guy that I kind of look up to and try to model my game after for sure.
Yeah, that's a really good one. not a bad choice at all. We wanted to get a couple lighter questions in for you here. Start with your walk-up music. How do you choose your walk-up music? And is there a leader in the clubhouse for this year? Are you going to change it up? What are you working with this year?
I haven't chosen. I've gotten it down to a few. I'm more of like an old school, like R&B hip hop kind of guy for my walk-up. I don't really like going with the new school stuff. I feel like the old school is just kind of more my vibe. But I'm debating between a few, and I haven't quite decided yet, but I got a little bit of time to try to figure that out. And usually everyone tries to kind of have a little fun with it, tries to represent kind of who they are off the field, a little bit of personality. There's not really one guy that it kind of leads that. Everyone's kind of just on their own, just picking whatever they want, feels like is best for them.
Yeah, so I'm going to jump in, and we're gonna take a little bit away from baseball and talk about something else I enjoy, which is food. What's the best Athens lunch spot?
Athens lunch spot. I'd probably say a spot called Cali and Tito's. That's probably my go-to for lunch. It's like a Caribbean type joint, and it's like, so I get like a chicken quesadilla, and you can sit outside, and with the Georgia weather right now, it's a little hot, but if it cools down a little bit, that's definitely the go-to.
Yeah, I could certainly, that sounds about right. I mean, any place where you can get like a taco or a quesadilla, something like that, and you get a little bit of outside eating potentially, I mean, that's when you really kind of, I feel like that's when you really hit the sweet spot.
Oh yeah, for sure. Can't go wrong with it.
On a similar line, when you're at Chipotle, what's your go-to order at Chipotle?
Chipotle, gosh dang, that's my favorite place. I don't know how you guys do that. but I'm a pretty simple guy. I pretty much just go with the pinto beans, and I go extra chicken on it, got to get a little extra protein, and then I just go cheese. Three things, plain and simple.
That's they must love you there. That's so right through the line.
Yeah, I give them a little break through the line when I come through.
And who would you say the toughest pitcher you faced in your career is? I mean, there are a lot of really good pitchers in the SEC, a lot of good pitchers on your own team even, but who do you think the toughest pitcher you've faced is?
I'd probably say Casey Mize. Casey Mize for sure. I mean, he could run it up there pretty good, and then he'd throw that splitter on you, and it'd just fall right off the table. So I would definitely say Casey Mize.
All right, we got one more for you here, Cam. Just your favorite part about being a part of Georgia? I mean, it's a great college environment, great college town. What's your favorite part of being a student athlete at Georgia?
I would definitely say just being around the guys, honestly. I mean, we got a lot of talented guys on the team, but they're all, like, great individuals. I mean, we hang out all the time off the field, just pretty much doing whatever. And I don't think I'd want to be with any different group of guys. Just everyone's really down to earth, good guys, and that's what I enjoy doing.
Awesome. Well, that sounds like a fun group to be a part of. Should be a fun spring to follow the Bulldogs. We're going to be excited to do that. I know you're going to be excited to be out there playing. So we want to thank you today for joining the Baseball America College Podcast.
Yeah, thank you guys.
All right. Thank you again to Cam Shepherd for joining us here on the Baseball America College Podcast. Joe, Cam is going to play a big role. Sounds like he's very excited to be back for his senior year. I mean, just what are you now looking for out of both Cam, but also the kind of the Bulldogs as a whole as we look to 2020?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a guy who really has a clear picture of what he wants for this program in 2020, and that's obviously to get to Omaha, and certainly I think they're going to have the pieces to do that. It takes a lot to get there. You know, we just kind of talked about that and how difficult it is to do that in this day and age college baseball, but they're going to have the pieces to do that. And so for one, just watching to see, you know, sometimes, I mean, this sounds like a cliche and it's hard to pinpoint this, but there are certainly teams that you can just see it in their eyes early in the season. This is a hungry team to get back to that point. And you mentioned that it's a program that hasn't been there in more than a decade at this point. And so it's a proud program looking to get back to that point. So I'm kind of curious to see that. And, you know, he made a great point about, you know, so often it's just easy to everybody looks at offensive stats and then calls it a day on players, and obviously more astute observers and, you know, like, you know, folks at Baseball America, we're paying attention to the more nuanced parts of the games. But even I have to admit that sometimes I'm guilty of, when I'm looking at returning players for a roster, just kind of looking at the offensive side and the pitching side and not paying as much attention to the defense. And so for one, I appreciated him saying that, because I think that there's a lot of truth in that. And sometimes you can underrate the importance of a guy like a Cam Shepherd coming back, even though he certainly is an offensive contributor as well. So that's something I'll be looking for, is kind of seeing the way his defense kind of helps them go. I mean, if he was missing from the lineup, it would be, you'd look at the offensive contributions he made and talk about the losses there, but losing a starting shortstop is a big hole defensively. And so I'll be curious to see, in that case, I would have been curious to see how they'd fill it in. In this case, I'll be curious to see him captain that defense for one more go round. But certainly was a fun interview, and really enjoyed talking to him. And you know, you mentioned it, but this 2020 Georgia team is going to be one to watch.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that I remember talking to Scott Strickland about last year. Was, you know, Cam Shepherd hit like 220 last year, I think it was, and at times it was worse than that. And everyone around Georgia knew how important he was to the team, how vital it was to have him in there. And you know, Strickland was talking about just, okay, yeah, the batting average is not what it was in years past necessarily, but, you know, you look at what he does defensively and he's always impacting the game. And, you know, to his credit, he went through a bit of a slump. I think it was in like March and April, came out of it near the end of the season. And like I mentioned during the interview, he had a big walk-off home run at the SEC tournament. You know, he's a huge piece to have back for them. I do think a lot of the attention this year is just going to be on Hancock and Wilcox, because those are two guys that can go in the top 10 picks in the draft. But when you have that guy who's so experienced and so steady and just so good at such a premium position, I mean, that's a huge boost for this Georgia team. And when you look at it, I mean, yes, Vanderbilt's going to come into the season presumably as the favorite in the SEC East. But Georgia, just overall in the SEC, that might be the second best team in the league. I mean, I think if you look at the West, things are a little more up in the air in certain ways. Mississippi State and, you know, obviously they have a couple big pieces to replace. And, you know, Arkansas, you know, lost Dom Fletcher in center field. Obviously they have a lot back, but, you know, you lose Fletcher, you lose Campbell. The SEC feels like this year it might be, at least at the very top, leaning towards the East Division, and Georgia's a big part of that.
I think it's worth taking a minute, too, to really look at the big picture with Georgia and appreciate the fact that they're back here. You know, I asked Cam a little bit about, you know, how proud he is to have been a part of getting this program back to where it was, because, I mean, Scott Strickland was 4 years into his tenure, which was Cam's freshman year, and they had really struggled. And, you know, there was – you were starting to wonder. I think it was reasonable to wonder if Scott Strickland was going to be the guy to get this program turned around. And to Georgia's credit, they were patient with him and gave him that fifth year, which turned out to be a big year, and they, you know, end up hosting a regional. But – This felt like it was very close to not really coming together. And you know, it's funny to hear Cam mention that, hey, he sold us on, this is the class I've been waiting for. And turns out he was right. You know, I mean, that was the group that really spearheaded this program getting back to where they are. And so I think it's really, you know, you don't often see, you know, a program kind of get to that point where there's kind of questions about whether or not they're going to get the ship righted, and see that end up happening. A lot of times the plug gets pulled. A lot of times they get impatient and it's time to hit the restart button again. And Georgia didn't do that. And now you're seeing the fruits of that labor.
There's a story that is mostly already researched. Notes just waiting for me to finish writing it that I was trying to write in the spring and ran out of time. But it's going to get done. I very much intend to get done. And it's about how, you know, some athletic directors exercise patience with their coaches, and that, you know, everyone wants, you know, all this instant success. And you can find a lot of cases of very quick turnarounds in college baseball. Obviously Vanderbilt, you know, 15 years ago now, Tim Corbin takes Vanderbilt to super regionals in his second season after Vanderbilt hadn't made a regional appearance in something like 20 years. Butch Thompson at Auburn turned that real quick. But there are places that you can't turn as quickly. And, you know, if you look at what Arizona State has done now, if you look at what Georgia is doing, you know, I think those are two places where there was a lot of talk about hot seat, a lot of talk about, like, are these guys the right guys for the job? Can they get it done? And then given a little bit of patience from their athletic directors, they now are getting it done. And when I was talking with Coach Strickland for that story, you know, he talked about what Cam mentioned, that he just kept saying that, you know, we just got to get to this class. We just got to get these guys in here. We got to get there and then we'll be fine. And just the way that college baseball recruiting now works, where, you know, it's, you come in, like these coaches come in the end of June, start of July usually, and then school starts, you know, six weeks, 2 months later. Like, there's not a whole lot they can do about that first group. So that's almost just like whatever. And a lot of kids defect these days when there is a coaching change. So now you're talking about a full year before you can even really impact a recruiting class more than one or two guys. And then even then, most of those kids are already locked in because signing day is in November. So you're hiring a coach who effectively can't do much with their first two classes. There are some exceptions to that, obviously. I know that can be worked around. But it just makes it that much harder for a place, especially in a powerful conference like the SEC, where to go up, you have to be passing really, really high-end schools. And so that's what Georgia did. And this class, Shepherd's class, you know, it really kind of was the impetus for this program to start moving in the right direction. They still finished under 500 his freshman year, but then, you know, his sophomore year, they're able to host a regional. Last year, again, they take another step forward. They're the number four overall seed in the NCAA tournament. And of course, it ended not the way they wanted it to, getting upset by Florida State, but you can see the progression. And now, I mean, they looked like an Omaha contender last year, but now they certainly look like an Omaha favorite. We're talking about a team that is probably going to rank in the top five of the preseason. So, there's a lot on Georgia right now, but it is very interesting to just watch the progression, the steady progression, really, of the program over the last 3 or 4 years. All right, so we talked about Georgia with regards to interview we just did with Cam Shepherd, and you know, Cam Shepherd has a chance to be a really impactful senior, and I don't know if this is a trend in college baseball, because, I mean, there have been seniors playing college baseball throughout college baseball history, but for a while there, it felt like there were just a lot fewer seniors on, you know, highly competitive teams that could go out and compete for spots in Omaha, at least among the power conferences, that there were, it got to be the point where if you were a drafted junior, you were going to sign probably because there just wasn't much leverage for you coming back as a college senior. And while that part remains true, it does feel like we have more players choosing to return for their senior seasons around the country, but, you know, especially in the SEC, you know, last year, of course, Vanderbilt went to the national title with half a dozen seniors on the roster. Some really impactful ones like Ethan Paul starting every day at shortstop, Julian Infante continuing to be a part of the lineup that he was in every day for 4 years, and Patrick Raby on the mound ends his career as, you know, one of the best starting pitchers statistically in Vanderbilt history in terms of wins and games started and things like that. Of course, Jake Mangum and Antoine Duplantis made a lot of noise chasing the SEC hits record. Noah Sawn from Navy was a Golden Spikes finalist. So, Joe, what I want to talk about today is who do we think can make an impact like those guys did in 2019? I mean, Cam Shepard, Georgia, an obvious pick there, coming back, like we've mentioned, to play shortstop for the Bulldogs. But who else are you looking at that can make an impact this year? And I think one of the guys that you have in mind is going to be playing his senior year, not too far from where Cam is playing his.
Yeah, I mean, one of the guys that came to mind for me right away, and it's kind of a similar conversation to Cam Shepard, and that's Austin Wilhite at Georgia Tech, their shortstop. And he's pretty similar in terms of, you know, a steady hand at shortstop, has played a lot of games at shortstop. You know, the glove is kind of ahead of the bat. But it's not to say he's not productive. He actually showed a little bit of pop last year for the Yellow Jackets. So, you know, we talk about with Cam the value of having a veteran shortstop who knows the position, knows the conference, knows the high level of play that's required of that position in that league. Austin Wilhite's kind of a similar story there. So I think that's going to be a key piece for Georgia Tech. Another, should be another talented team for Georgia Tech, but I think he's going to be a big part of it there. A couple other guys that stood out to me. One, this kind of an under the radar name, but Lyle Lockhart at Houston was a two-way guy who kind of has emerged. His career's been a little bit interesting in that he was more of a bat-first two-way guy at some points of his career. Last year was definitely more of an arm-first two-way guy. Kind of led the rotation for the Cougars last year and maybe was like a little bit over his skis in the role. He didn't do poorly by any stretch of the imagination. Mid-threes ERA, ended up throwing 80-plus innings for him. That's not to say he didn't do well, but it feels like maybe there's a little bit more there. Last year, maybe he was a little bit green for that role, but he had some big moments for them. So I'll be interested to see if he kind of takes another step forward in his development there. Rankin Woolley's a name that came up to me. Auburn's going to have a couple holes to fill offensively. So a guy like Woolley, who's not only been in the battles with Auburn, but also previously was at LSU. So he certainly is no stranger to the SEC. I think he's an important piece there. The FSU bullpen has a handful of guys, Antonio Velez, Clayton Kwiatkowski, Chase Haney. Those are all really veteran guys who've thrown a lot of innings. Duke is the same way. Chase Cheek was the guy that stood out to me, you know, really athletic guy, good bat, good speed, led the team in steals last year. But two-way guy Matt Mervis is also a senior. Bill Chilleri is a senior. And one more was even more under the radar than Lockhart is Mike Antico at St. John's. Hit almost 400 last year. I think he's hitting something like 350 over his career. Been a four-year contributor for the Johnnies. He'll be back for one more go-around. You know, he kind of made their offense go last year on a team that they really kind of struggled to score runs. So with a little bit of help for him there, maybe his numbers are even a little bit more, or even show a little bit more improvement as a senior. But, you know, I don't know that this senior class necessarily, I mean, we knew going into the season that Jake Mangum and Antoine Duplantis and Noah Song were bona fide stars at the college level. And this year it feels like there are some of those guys. I know you've got some on your list that have already made big impacts in college baseball, but it feels like there maybe aren't those upper crust guys who are already bona fide stars. And we're kind of betting on projection or betting on guys that maybe had some down years, on betting on guys to rebound from that. And that's what we're looking at with this senior class as opposed to what we saw last year.
Yeah, there's definitely not a guy like a Mangum or a Duplantis that, you know, is going to be chasing such a prominent record, you know, and of course, Jake Mangum last year was the most famous college baseball player in the country. That does not exist in this year's senior class. I liked the Antico call. I heard some really nice things about him up on the Cape Cod League this summer. And I think that if St. John's is going to make any kind of noise this year, I think, and they definitely can, I think he's going to be a big part of that. So I like that call. Lyle Lockhart, going to be very interesting. And like you said, how's he going to get used? And then what's he going to do with that? Because, you know, Houston could use him to, as they look to bounce back from a subpar for the Cougars season, but, you know, still a pretty good year overall, but they're going to be looking to get back into regionals in 2020. So for me, the name that springs to mind first is John McMillan at Texas Tech. Like Lockhart, he's been a two-way guy in the past, but at this point, pretty much just a pitcher. That was a big, big get for Texas Tech to get him back for his senior year. That was a guy that we were expecting to go out in the draft well enough that he would sign. Big time power arm, has struggled with control at various points in his career, but when he's right, there's not a whole lot of guys out there that are like him. And so if Texas Tech can plug him in to the rotation or maybe to a closer's role, you know, he's going to pitch impactful innings for the Red Raiders. And however it is, you know, whatever role that ends up being, they have a lot of guys on the staff that, you know, they can move some pieces around. Whatever it is that he ends up doing, it's going to be very good, you would have to imagine. And so getting him back is big as the Red Raiders try and, you know, continue their dominance in the Big 12 and trying to get back to Omaha for a fourth time in 6 years, I believe it is. So, you know, that's a big piece for the Red Raiders to bring back. A couple other names that came up. Brett Auerbach at Alabama. If the Crimson Tide are going to take a step forward this year and compete to get into a regional, I think he's going to play a big role. He was very good on the Cape this summer. Super versatile. I think he's going to be a pretty interesting senior sign in the draft this year, just because of that versatility and the ability to get behind the plate and what he showed on the Cape, just in terms of putting the bat on the ball. I think that's a guy that some teams are going to be looking at taking in the top 10 rounds, or at least early on day three, just to get him into the system and see what he can do in pro ball. Brandon Beasley at Cal Poly. Again, that's a team that trying to get back into regionals. They've been kind of on the cusp, kind of among the contenders in the Big West the last couple of years, but not been able to break through. You know, Beasley, they've always had good hitters there. Under Larry Lee, I think the Mustangs are very intriguing this year, and to have a guy like Beasley back in the lineup is significant for them. Austin Laneworthy, again, one of the more famous freshmen on this list. He, of course, hit the home run that sent the Gators to Omaha 2 years ago. He's back. I'll be interested to see how he gets used. Again, he's been a two-way-ish guy, almost exclusively an outfielder, but he pitched a lot more on the Cape this summer, and maybe Florida can use him out of the bullpen this year as a left-hander. Certainly, we know what he can do with the bat, and he's coming off. He didn't really have the junior season that I think people were expecting him to. I think people were looking for a breakout from him, and you know, maybe it comes this year. So he's definitely one to watch. And then in my alma mater, Ball State, John Baker coming back. He was overshadowed last year by Dre Jameson. Baker was banged up a little bit out of the chute, but then wound up being an All-Mac first team pitcher, very good pitcher for Ball State. It was surprising to see him fall as far as he did in the draft. And ultimately that led to him coming back to Ball State. And, you know, that gives them a very experienced arm to lead the staff. We talked last week about what Central Michigan's potential is in the MAC. Well, you know, if Ball State is able to challenge them, it's going to start with John Baker being, a big-time force for them on Friday nights, and just having that experience to go up against any lineup around the country that he may face. So, I don't know, that's what, 8 to 10 guys that we've kind of thrown out there as potential impact seniors. You know, we'll see which ones of them pop, but, you know, Joe, what do you make of the overall trend to seniors becoming maybe a little more important in some of these national championship contending clubs?
Yeah, I think it's kind of what we've talked about on the podcast before, and it's just that I think there's more emphasis put on going to college and staying in college in the same way that I think players are seeing the value in, you know, if there may be an unpolished product coming out of high school and perhaps they get drafted, but maybe they feel like their ceiling's a little higher, they go to college, kind of polish off a little bit, and then try to jump in the draft. I think in a similar way, I think, you know, to your point about it used to be kind of a sure thing. If you get as a junior, if you get drafted, oftentimes you're kind of looking at signing or looking for an excuse to sign. Now maybe players are taking a step back and saying, you know, I believe in my talent. I believe that if I get into a minor league system, whether it's this year or next year, I'm going to move up the system because I believe in the talent I have. Let me go back, work on my craft a little bit, get a degree, and then come out next year and be a little bit more mature, a little more ready. And like I said, if a player believes in himself that he's going to move through the system, there's, you know, this year versus next year. In the end, if they end up being a big leaguer, they're probably not going to look back at that 1 year and think about the year they missed riding buses in minor league baseball. So I just think there's a greater value put on coming back and honing your craft. And I think also I think the other side of it, I think the programs and these coaches are you know, really putting an emphasis on finding senior leadership, because at the top programs, you know, you're not really used to having quality, productive seniors on your roster. You might have some guys who have been, you know, walk-ons who have lasted or kind of just program players who play part-time roles. But I think now we're seeing coaches put an emphasis on trying to, as you often hear in basketball, you know, get old and stay old. And sometimes that's finding players who you think are going to be around for 4 years, the guy who's maybe not as projectable but can be productive at this level, and filling your roster in with guys like that. And the value that provides, you know, just in terms of the maturity and the leadership aspect and the experience, and experienced teams win in the postseason. We've seen that time and again.
It really is unfortunate that the draft works the way it does for these kids, that, you know, if you come back for your senior year, you kind of have to understand you're not going to be seeing a significant signing bonus just because you have so little leverage at the negotiating table. But as unfortunate as that is for the players, and there's a lot of unfortunate financial realities in professional baseball, but it is good for the program. It does give kids an opportunity to finish degrees in a lot of cases, and, you know, just enjoy being a college student, because you know, they're, like you said, you know, the alternative is out there riding buses, you know, in the Sally League or the Appy League or something. And if you can go and go back and play in an SEC stadium, or, you know, wherever you've been for the last few years, a very comfortable place, and a place where, you know, you've had a lot of success, I can certainly understand why you would want to finish your college career and take another shot at a championship or improving your draft stock or just improving development and gaining a degree, whatever it is that these players are after. It's exciting to see, frankly. I mean, that Vanderbilt had 6 seniors come back last year. I think that's cool. And, you know, so we'll see if that continues. It's certainly good for the programs that can get that leadership back. Now, it is October. You know, frankly, while the college baseball calendar is heating up a little bit, just in terms of fall ball, this is still a little bit slower time on the calendar. And Joe, I know this is a time when you and I can catch up on, you know, some TV viewing, some music listening, maybe that we haven't been able to get to in the first half of the year. So what are you looking at, you know, when you have a chance, what are you dialing up that, you know, maybe you haven't been able to get to earlier in the year?
Well, I have two important off seasons in my life, one of which is, of course, the, you know, the baseball off season, specifically the college baseball off season. But then there's also the off season for the Bachelor programming. I'm a big Bachelor fan. It's a guilty pleasure of mine. Although, you know, like, I feel like there's not the shame that was used to be associated with being a Bachelor fan. If you're a man, you know, there used to kind of be like this shame about it. And it was, you know, oh, well, I watch it with my girlfriend or my wife or what have you. And it just feels like there's not that anymore. I mean, goodness gracious. I mean, during the, whenever the Bachelor's going on or Bachelorette or what have you, I feel like every college football or college basketball beat writer that I follow on Twitter is also tweeting about the Bachelor. So I'm certainly far from alone on that. And I actually started watching it because my sister was into it, and me and my sister are like 11 years apart. And so like when she was, I don't know, 15 or 16, and I was in my late 20s. We just didn't have a lot in common, so I started watching it so it would give us something to talk about, and then I got hooked, and so that's where I'm at. But that has ended. They do Bachelor, and they do Bachelorette, and they do a show called Bachelor in Paradise. Those are all over. So lately, I've gotten into this Bravo show called Below Deck, which is a show that follows, a reality show that follows the people who operate the charter yachts for really rich people. So these really rich people will pay like, you know, 200 grand to charter a yacht for 3 or 4 days. And so it follows the deckhands and the stewardesses and the chef and the captain as they like cater to these really wealthy people. And it is like super lowbrow reality television, but it is fantastic. It's just like such a interesting ecosystem to follow. Like it's a world that I have never experienced. I'm clearly not wealthy enough to charter my own yacht. I have never worked in that industry. So it's like a world that's like completely new to me. So it's kind of like learning about an industry while I watch these people have drama and like try to hook up with each other and, you know, go out and party when they're in these places like, you know, in Croatia and Greece and the south of France and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I've been barreling through lately. I did not intend to land there. It was not something I sought out. I just kind of was flipping through YouTube TV one night and happened upon it. I heard of the show, and now I'm pretty much hooked. And that kind of is a guilty pleasure. That's one that you listeners are lucky I'm letting you in on this little secret. Because I'm not that ashamed about The Bachelor, but I might be ashamed about Below Deck. I don't know. But I don't know. That's my recommendation. If you're looking for something you can just check out on and just like let your brain wander, that's a good one. Because it's just an interesting ecosystem, and there's a lot of drama. And that's, I guess, all you're really asking for in these reality shows.
I can't say I've checked that one out, but you know, it sounds educational, so that's a positive.
You're learning about maritime laws. You can write it off as that.
So because it's October, I suppose mine maybe is a little more topical, but you know, it doesn't have to be Halloween season for me to be interested in zombie shows / movies. I've definitely seen not every zombie movie because there are a million of them, but a lot of them. Pretty consistently looking for new ones. I saw one, I haven't tracked this down. It's some European one about zombie soccer. Very interested in getting my hands on that. I don't remember the title. I believe it's in French, if I can do that. But more readily available, I'm working my way through Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix and the last season of iZombie. And while I feel like Santa Clarita Diet, because it has, you know, some pretty big time actors in it, probably doesn't feel such guilty pleasure, iZombie is a little bit teen drama-y. So that one probably is my truer guilty pleasure this time of the year. It's in its final season wrapped. I'm trying to finish it.
Are you going to be disappointed when that zombie soccer movie is actually, it just turns out, like shot for shot remakes of World Cup games just played by zombies? Like that's all it is.
That'd be amazing. why would that be a disappointment? But also I've seen the trailer, and so if it's anything like the trailer, it looks amazingly terrible, which is kind of what you're going for here. I mean, like, there are good movies in the genre, like 28 Days Later, but a lot of them end up being total dreck. But like that's part of the charm, I guess. I don't know.
Not to get us completely in the like sidetracked in the gutter on this conversation, but like, why do you think it is there are certain shows or genres that we as a society seem to be attracted to, not in spite of, but almost because of the campiness to it or the low production quality? Do you have any idea why that is? Because I've been kind of fascinated by that, and I'm not immune to that, certainly. I feel it too, but it's just kind of interesting how we so often seem to be seeking like the highest quality version of everything we consume, and yet there are certain subsections of TV shows and movies where we actually kind of want them to be low-key bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a sociologist, Joe. I took Soc 100, I think it was, and that's about my exposure to that. So if any of you guys out there listening are sociologists,
sociologists
majors, maybe even just a minor, and want to weigh in on that, you can hit us up on Twitter. That's probably the easiest way to get a hold of us. Joe is at Joe Healy BA. He would be very interested in hearing the answer.
Yeah, please. That's definitely
not
a lie. I would really like sociologists to tweet at me and tell me why we enjoy campy television and movies.
if there's an article we can read, you know, something like that, Joe is at Joe Healy BA. I am at Ted Cahill. Let us know if you have other questions about various pop culture or college baseball adjacent things. You can address them to us there as well, and we may address them on a future show of the Baseball America College podcast. And so to find these future episodes that I am discussing or talking about here, make sure you are subscribed to the Baseball America College podcast on your favorite podcast app, whether that's Stitcher, Apple, Spotify. We're on pretty much any place you can find podcasts, you can find the Baseball America podcast. So if you're subscribed, you will find the latest episodes there. And if you have a chance to rate us or review us, we would appreciate that as well.
Or just download the Dadgum Baseball America app.
You can also download the Baseball America app, which has a little tab for podcasts in it. So they all feed into that as well. So whatever your preferred delivery method is, we got you. And speaking of things that I'm supposed to be pitching, Head of the Class, Baseball America's new college baseball book. Make sure to check that out. You can pre-order it at store.baseballamerica.com. It will be out later this fall, looking back the last four decades of college baseball, all the best teams, players, coaches. We're covering it all. It's a fun trip down memory lane. And if you have made it this far through a college podcast, college baseball podcast, I feel like you would definitely get something out of it. So again, that's store.baseballamerica.com, and it is available there for pre-order. We want to thank Cam Shepard again for joining us today on the latest edition of the Baseball America College podcast. We want to thank you for listening, and we will be back here next week. I believe I will be in Jupiter for the Perfect Game tournament later this week into next week. I believe, however, we will still be able to have a podcast for you. Again, though, because of the uncertainty, the best way to ensure when you get the next one, though, is to be subscribed to the podcast on your favorite podcasting app. So Joe and I will be back to talk to you then. We want to thank you for listening again. We'll talk to you soon.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.